To my dearest friends, I am honored to welcome you back once more for another foray into the many horrors of the far future. None can deny the fact that within the grim darkness of the 41st millennium, one's daily life will feel far more akin to a waking nightmare than of anything else. Mankind has been forced to desperately cling to the fading embers of the once mighty Imperium, but even though it has since been cleaved in twain by the emergence of the Cicatrix Maledictum, it does not mean that their meek souls will go so quietly into the long night. There are aliens to be found behind every star, clawing for dominance in this galaxy so steeped in blood, and yet, even as they wage an eternal war, they cannot be considered as our greatest enemy. Rather, that dark crown has been claimed by our wayward kin, who willingly shunned their humanity, choosing instead to tarnish their souls with the foulest gifts of chaos. We all know of the traitor legions who fell to the siren song of the warp during the Horus heresy in the hopes of overthrowing the rule of the false emperor and to plunge the galaxy into flames. But the Scions of Chaos were never to perform this task without immaterial aid, and so it was during this time that the first gifts of the dark gods were bestowed upon the mortal Astartes to swell them with the tainted powers of chaos. For some, this manifested in the form of simple enhancements to their physical strength or to their psychic abilities, but as it so happens, the human body was never intended to carry the intangible weight of these demonic boons. One may claim that they are in control of their own fate, or even believe that they have been empowered by the dark possessions. Yet this is an opinion most foolish. In due time, the so-called gifts of chaos will overwhelm and consume the bearer, tearing apart the tattered remnants of their soul, leaving but a warp-born abomination, cursed to now serve their dark masters until the end of time. But despite the dangers, we would be lying to ourselves if we did not acknowledge the terrifying strengths to be gained from simply pledging yourself to one of the mighty gods of chaos. As such, today, my dearest friends, we shall be investigating the lives of those who have trodden this most forbidden road. To begin with, we will give an overview to the topic of possessions and of why a mortal may wish to obtain the dark powers of chaos. After, we will move through the ranks of the traitors, looking into those with such vile names as the possessed, the eight-bound, and even of the biomechanical horrors known as obliterators. But I have bloviated enough, and I do believe that now it is time for us to begin. Our journey today will take us into the hellscape of the warp, so please be warned that if your gaze lingers for just a second too long on the maddening vistas of the Immaterium, then you may very well find yourself to be trapped and destined to fall into the abominable ranks of the possessed. The first thing to understand is that beyond our own plane of reality, that there exists an infernal dimension of pain and suffering known simply as the warp. This Empyrean ocean of souls is directly influenced and molded by the emotional actions of mortals, which will trickle down and flow into the impossible hellscape, filling it with an endless wellspring of power that very few will ever be able to tame. Though this place is defined by madness, it is not without order, as the four gods of chaos will rule over their own realm, inhabited by their legions of lesser demons, who have been formed as minor extensions to the power of the gods themselves. The Dark Quartet have ever been locked in a petty war between one another, and yet, such is their might that they have peered into our own material realm, only to find a veritable army of the devoted, who would quite literally give up their own souls for but a shred of Empyrean power. Thus, if one of the Chaos Gods believes that a mortal may somehow further their own nefarious ambitions, then it is not unheard of for the demonic lord to provide an offering, though there will always be an unforeseen price to pay. Initially, this may manifest as what is known as a mark of chaos. Their patron god will brand the aspirant with the faintest trace of their unholy essence, signifying that their prayers and sacrifices have not gone unnoticed. The actual powers channeled through the mark will almost always be quite subtle, and yet from its presence the warp will ever maintain its baleful glare upon the wearer. But in any case, depending on the god, their powers will be quite different. For instance, a mark of Nurgle would enable a cultist to withstand a greater degree of damage whilst simultaneously causing their body to slowly rot and decay. A mark of Tzeentch, however, would allow you to more easily commune with the realm of the warp. But in doing so, you will hear far more whispering voices echoing out along the winds of chaos. As the marked mortal fawns away over the new energies flowing through their veins, and as they dream of one day kneeling before their patron god with the Emperor's skull in their hand, they will be utterly blindsided to the creeping taint of their treasured gift. Given that a mark of chaos will have been born from the warp itself, it is no wonder that it will slowly yet inevitably corrupt the very soul of its wearer, pushing them further down the dark path of damnation, from where there can be no redemption nor forgiveness. Though modest indeed, a mark will likely be their first tangible source of power to have been derived from the warp, and the proud mortal who now bears it upon their soul will almost always be left desperate for more. From this point, they will be compelled to perform increasingly depraved acts to garner the attention of the ruinous powers, not only in their lust for strength, but also from the worming influences of the mark itself. If the cultist proves themselves as going above and beyond in their devotion to chaos, then there may come a day where they are presented with a truly nefarious offer, and this would be where we move into the subject of possessions. A lesser demon may pledge their own immaterial power to the aspirant, and in return for but the smallest fragment of their eternal soul, the creature will infest and strengthen the new champion. The corporeal form of this mortal will undoubtedly swell from the new power rushing through their veins, often causing violent mutations to occur, such as with new limbs bursting from their side or from fleshy talons sprouting out of their fingertips. At this point, however, it is important to note that it is highly unlikely for the demon to be contributing its power out of some sense of benevolence. The reason I say this is that even in situations where a human survives their possession, the demon will still remain as a sentient force, and by their very nature, they will never be content to simply surrender themselves to a pathetic mortal. Yes, they have sworn themselves to servitude, but if they disagree with the actions of their new master, then they will be able to compel them, either subtly or forcefully, to act more within the purview of their patron god. Thus, we can begin to understand that to taste on the fruits of the warp is to invite an inevitable change within your very soul, as your subconscious thoughts will be bent and twisted away, only to now be controlled by the demons themselves. On this point, you may be wondering as to why a demon would ever offer themselves to a mortal cultist, and in truth, the reasons can be rather varied. Firstly, we should consider that many possessions will occur without the consent of the demon, Instead, during a malefic ritual, an occultist will summon a demon into our own plane of reality before wrangling it into psychic submission and forcing it to possess their chosen companion. This individual, if prepared for such an event, should be of a strong enough stock to be able to withstand the sudden intrusion of a demon upon their soul, and if capable, they will be able to assert their dominance and enslave this demonic entity to their own will. With that being said, however, if the Neverborn senses weakness in their new host, then they will simply tear themselves out, often killing the victim in the process. But as long as the champion holds a strong enough constitution, then the demon will remain in subservience for the foreseeable future. This is almost always performed in the tainted pursuit of power, where the chosen cultist will believe that through the gifts of a demon, that they may arise to bring the fury of their patron god into our mortal realm. Rather sadly, we must admit that if they are in fact able to endure the demonic influence and survive the possession, then they will undeniably have ascended in their power, and they will surely be eager to exploit their new, hellish strength to great effect. I should note that this process can similarly be used to bind a demon to the soul of a mortal as a means of imprisoning the entity, or for drawing out its own immaterial power. This is often done by the more radical of inquisitorial agents, who will utilize the so-called demon hosts as terrible weapons against their foes. The second reason behind a possession would be from a demon actually choosing a mortal host to dominate. The most common victims here will be from untrained psychers, who hold a much stronger connection to the warp, and if they do not know of how to appropriately handle their powers, then they will find themselves in a situation where the Neverborn have hunted them down like prey. The hellscape of the warp can almost be visualized as a turbulent ocean of energy, but within that psionic tempest, the souls of psychically sensitive species will shine out ever so brightly like a blazing pyre amidst the dark. A baseline human would be almost as imperceivable as a single raindrop within a storm, but if they hold the gifts of the psyker, then it will be relatively easy for a demonic creature to navigate through the swell and to track their location in the material world. Thanks to the psychic presence of their victim, the walls between the planes of reality will have weakened, allowing the demon to tear their way through and to fall on their chosen weakling like a rabid beast. They will strike out at their heart before painfully crawling into the very soul of the pathetic mortal, only to ensnare and shackle their personality and essence into some dark corner of their mind. At this point, the Neverborn will assert itself as the new owner of their fleshy body, now ready to tread upon the soils of our material realm as a demon in disguise. The reason this is such an important point is that the creatures of the warp find it incredibly challenging to remain within our own dimension for extended periods. Some of the only times they may emerge unabated will be from specific summoning rituals, or from when a cataclysmic warp storm has shredded the thin veil of the immaterium, allowing them to flow out like water through a cracked dam. But if they can possess a mortal, then they will use their body as an anchor point, allowing them to remain within the material realm for as long as they desire, or, of course, until they are caught. This was notably the case with the fallen Primarch Fulgrim, who in a moment of weakness begged for aid from a demonic entity, which invaded his soul and wore his flesh as the newly ascended demon prince of Slaanesh. In time, the Primarch would find freedom, and he now once again is the master of his own mind. However, over the long years, his soul has been perverted, and he still stands as a harrowing servant to the dark gods. The third reason for a demon to possess a mortal would be from a warp-born entity to willingly offer themselves in a possession if they believe that their chosen will truly rise as a champion to chaos. In these scenarios, the demon will hope that as their host grows in power, that they will be able to take something of a free ride and emerge from the endeavor as a far stronger force than would have otherwise been possible. This is rather a risky gamble, and so it is most often taken by incredibly weak, unaffiliated demons who foolishly believe that they have anything to contribute to their mortal champion. Also, if a chaotic lord has grown drunk on the powers of the warp, then it is doubtful that they will extend any of their grace to a pathetic, groveling demon, and in most cases, the creature will simply be excised and bound to a torturous artifact where they will remain trapped forevermore. But in any case, if one was not too careful, then they may allow one too many lesser demons to infest their soul, in which case their own body will collapse in a writhing nightmare of flesh and Empyrean energy. This is a fate which often befalls those who would make deals with the dark gods. But now that we have learned of the powers which one may receive should they be open to a possession, I do believe that it is time for us to investigate these champions in a little more detail. We will begin with the weakest of the disciples who have embraced the powers of the warp, and they would be known broadly as the accursed cultists. At one point, they were standard humans, born pure of soul, but over the course of their lives, they will have strayed from the light of the Emperor, only to find refuge in the arms of the dark gods themselves. We cannot say as to why they originally turned away from humanity. Perhaps they believed that their prayers went unanswered, or that the Emperor had willingly led mankind astray. But in any case, from their newfound interests in the darkness of chaos, they will have found the truly divine powers of the warp and drank deeply from its immaterial well. Cultists will be willingly brought into the chaotic warbands of the galaxy to act as shock troops or ritualistic fodder, but once within their new family, they may be exposed to the darkest horrors of the warp. For you see, within their hidden bastions, lesser demons will prowl about. And if they find a stray cultist lost within a dark walkway, then they will simply fall upon them to either devour or possess their soul. And in the case of the latter, they will seize their body to be used as a physical anchor to this realm. Others will fall victim to the experimental sorceries of their fellow kin, who will happily abduct the cultist, only to perform diabolical rituals, drawing forth lesser demons to infest their corporeal form in the hopes of siphoning off some semblance of power from them. In time, the ensnared demons will grow restless in their claustrophobic, fleshy cage, and so they will carelessly lash out with their immaterial energies to give themselves a little more space to breathe. Unfortunately, the human body was never meant to withstand the writhing tantrums of an inborn demon. And so, in a grisly display of gore, their bodies will burst open, with the bloody sprays mutating and warping into new limbs until the victim is barely left standing as a newly reborn horror of the warp. Though we may find them to be quite disgusting to look upon, it is important to understand that the followers of chaos will view these mutations as blessed gifts, which should always be treasured, as they are seen as another tangible example of the powers which may be bequeathed by the dark gods, should a mortal hold fast in their ruinous faith. Nobody could possibly predict as to the nature of the mutation which a cultist receives, as a demon could manifest with giant leathery wings, wriggling tentacles, gnarled horns, or even as something as simple as an immense living sword. But eventually, their gifts will prove to be a weight far too crushing to bear, as more of their kin come forward to carve chaotic symbols into their racked flesh, and as more demons come to possess their already bloated form, then their body may simply break. Every bone will have shattered, every limb twisted and reformed, and as the lesser demons claw their way through their wretched skin, they will be utterly unrecognizable as having ever once stood as a humble human. But it matters not, for these cultists will now be known as torments, and they are to be used as the expendable beasts to the chaotic war bands. It is not unheard of for a heretical demagogue to intentionally produce a torment by partially binding dozens of demons to a pathetic cultist, whose own flesh has been engraved with a long-forgotten seal of dominance, forcing them to hearken to their every command. From here, they will be driven into battle, tearing through the enemy lines as further demonic entities sprout through from their bloody form, eagerly seeking to kill without a single care for the tattered soul of the human host, who will be all too aware of their new state of eternal anguish. But with those feeble dregs out of the way, let us now look to those who had abandoned their humanity eons ago, as they ascended from but a pathetic human to a firstborn marine of the Adeptus Astartes. We know that they were formed to be innately stronger than a human in every aspect, and yet they were never freed from our common desires, and so they too are susceptible to the whispering temptations of chaos. Thus, when we look within a warband, we will often find Marines who have fallen to the seductive allure of a lesser demon, promising them with a destiny of glory, should they only open up their souls for but the briefest of moments. The covetous Astartes, who knows no fear, and yet is perhaps slightly too rash in his judgment, will permit the groveling demon to infest their body through a terrible ritual from which they will emerge as a possessed marine. As I stated, the Astartes are much stronger, not only in their physical prowess, but also in their mental constitution. And so they will be able to withstand the insidious intrusions of far more powerful demons without losing their own mind in the process. These never-born entities are never too willing to share in their powers, and so the Marine will be forced to undergo several months of self-afflicted torture to carve up both their own body and soul into a form which will simply be too tantalizing for a demon to ignore. Also, even after they have been possessed, the Marine will not shy away from undergoing new rituals intended to further swell their demonic companion with power, or to simply possess him with several additional demons who will jostle and clash with one another in their new mortal prison. This, however, will only be performed if he truly believes himself to be strong enough to assert his dominance over the hell-spawned creatures, as if he turns out to be too weak to withstand their Empyrean forces, then he will simply collapse into a chaos spawn. The possessed Marines, given their nature, will be far more effective at utilizing the gifts of the warp when compared to the accursed cultists. In part, this will be thanks to their aforementioned mental fortitude, which allows them to spur the bound demons into forming specific mutations, without being at a risk of collapsing into a beast such as a torment or a chaos spawn. But more importantly, we must remember that the Marines are tremendously imposing figures in their physicality, and thanks to their immense frame, the mutations of the demons will simply fit them better than they would for a regular human. For instance, if a lesser demon was to possess a human, only to consume and regurgitate the bearer's arm into a bloated, crushing claw with pincers at over a meter in length, then that poor heretic would likely struggle to ever lift it from the ground, and they would probably be forced to drag it along the earth as a testament to their demonic corruption. But for a traitor Astartes, swelled by the powers of the warp, this beastly appendage will be effortlessly hoisted up, and they will be more than able to bring its full might against a victim, whose skull will surely be crushed like an old egg within the jaws of this demonic armament. Given their strength, the possessed Marines will be more than willing to prove their further devotion to the dark gods by permitting their demonic entity to influence and corrupt their corporeal form. Their feet may be replaced with gnarled hooves, attached to legs which now sport an extra joint, allowing the host to bound across the tainted grounds like some form of bipedal beast. Their armor may begin to bubble, only to burst open in a spray of immaterial ichor, as a demonic arm lashes outwards, oozing and writhing about as it eternally searches for prey. But this will not be the end, and the Marines will not be content until they have truly embraced the dark. Demonic flesh will seep out from their exposed limbs, wrapping around armor panels, only to draw them inwards, drowning them into the corrupted musculature of the Astartes, until it finally fuses directly to their ancient bones. From here, they will never be able to remove their armor, as it has now become a part of their very being. But this, in of itself, poses no problem to the Marine. In time, however, the armor will continue to mutate until it is barely recognizable as having ever once been Astartes power armor, as instead it will simply appear as a grotesque, hardened shell jutting out through the wearer's ragged flesh, almost as if their very bones were attempting to escape through their skin. Some possessed will cast aside their old helmets, choosing instead to bear a new demonic visage for all to see. Great spiraling horns will have burst through their twisted heads, below which their ghastly appearance will have been distorted as the lesser demons desperately attempt to force their own likeness to be imprinted upon the once stalwart face of this fallen angel. Others, however, will keep their helms, but these will similarly fuse with their faces only to mutate and transform into a new mask of horror. It has been noted that some of the possessed seem to be able to open their tainted masks almost as if it had become an extension of their own jaws, and from that gaping maw will come a torrent of warp fire, melting away armor and flesh alike in an immaterial conflagration. As an interesting point, the possessed Chaos Marines are some of the finest of trackers and hunters to be found within the warbands. This is because the bound demon, now tied to the physical anchor of their host, can perceive and detect changes within both the material and immaterial realm. Thus, they can simply follow the trail of anguish, sorrow, and despair left behind by their prey until they are finally found and fallen upon in a tornado of demonic fang and blade. According to our heretical sources, a possessed may similarly use these abilities to steer the great barges of the chaotic fleets, taking on the role of a navigator if no other psyker is available. This can be incredibly risky, as the crews will never be too sure as to whether or not the inbound demon has actually charted a fortuitous course, or if it simply wishes to bring them deeper into the bowels of the warp. With all that I have said, it is important to mention that the Marines, though possessed by demons, are not to be seen as feral beasts. they can maintain a great degree of control over their corrupted nature, and though the demons may wish to try, they will never be quite able to take over and dominate the mind of their Astartes host if he is able to remain at peace. Nevertheless, though, as we all know, the warp is an inherently corrupting force, and so their old personalities will be invariably changed and mutated by the influences of the demon. It has been said that one may still commune with a possessed marine. However, this would likely be a rather treacherous endeavor. The reason I say this is that if the emotions of the marine are spiked, either from a fiery argument or simply from entering into a battlefield, then the inborn demons will rise up and supplant the host, taking control of his body, from where they will invariably set out on a path of blood. Now freely in command, the possessed will tear through their foes, lashing out with ever-changing mutations to eviscerate enemies clad in armor, which was never quite designed to counter the ruinous powers of the warp. During this process, the remaining consciousness of the marine will be forced into a dark corner of their mind, to be fully aware of what is transpiring, but without the ability to fight against it. With that being said, we must remember that this is still a heretic who would seek to kill even if he was free from his demonic taint. And so, as he feels the warp overtaking him, he will resoundingly cry out that it is a good pain. Within the ranks of the Chaos Marines, some who are possessed will only harbor one of the lesser demons of the warp, who themselves were too meek to ever leave a ripple within the immaterial hellscape. But in recent years, we have discovered an unholy sect of the World Eater's Legion, who could never quite be satisfied to stand as a host to such a meager entity. These warriors would be known as the Eightbound, and thus far, they are some of the most bloodthirsty and frenzied of marines to have ever been encountered throughout the galaxy. In brief, they are Khorne Berserkers, who have been forced to withstand a possession of 8 mighty demons of Khorne. But if they are of a strong enough will, then they may arise from the ritual as one of the finest of mortal champions to the Lord of Skulls. If a warlord or a butcher surgeon of the World Eaters notes that a berserker is particularly ruthless in battle, then they may ordain for this bloodthirsty maniac to ascend past his current state and to prove his loyalty to Khorne by undergoing the following trial. The marine will be captured and shackled within a structure known as the Eight Cage, which from the outside will stand as a blood-spattered sarcophagus of ancient iron, covered in the unholy symbols of Khorne, and with a macabre offering of skulls stolen from many a material battlefield. Within, the berserker will be chained to a great stone slab, at which point the bloody surgeon will connect his butcher's nails to a tainted repository, directly exposing his soul to the roiling tempest of the warp. The victim will immediately feel the intrusion, but this torture will never be the same between two cases. Some will awaken in a coliseum of Khorne, where they must engage in a frenzied battle against waves of demonic forces, whereas others will simply be forced to maintain their sanity, whilst the currents of the immaterium tear their body asunder for what feels like an eternity. Some will inevitably fall to madness from this process, and their soul will be plucked from their tattered body as though it were a succulent fruit, only to be devoured by a horde of ravenous demons. Others may simply be overwhelmed, and the flowing energies of the warp will cause their body to burst, leaving them as a mindless abomination known as a chaos spawn. But if they can survive this first trial, then they will feel the chaotic tides change, and their own mind will become a battleground, fought between the marine himself and of 8 of Khorne's neverborn champions. As with before, this process will be nothing short of horrifying. And yet, if the Marine is able to conquer the Eight and wrangle them into a state of temporary submission, then he may arise from the great sarcophagus to once again walk amongst the living as an effigy to the bloody powers of Khorne. His body will have swelled in size, whilst his mind will be eternally changed, as he is now cursed to forever face off with an internal battle against the Eight demons who will ever be clawing at his soul in the hopes of one day overthrowing and devouring their host. But so long as he can endure, then he will bring the bloody fury of Khorne to wherever he walks, and during times of battle, those bound demons will emerge to empower and further push the Eight-bound Marine into ever more glorious acts of bloodshed. For most of the berserkers who survive, they will emerge in this constant state of mental anguish, desperately fighting for the continued preservation of their intact soul, but for a select few, they will be somewhat free from this malady. If a Marine is able to utterly dominate the Eight demons, then in some rare occurrences, his soul may fuse with their immaterial essence. And so, the combined fury of the traitorous champion and bloody demons will come together to form a monstrous figure known as an exalted Eight-bound. Given that they are no longer forced to defend themselves from the internal plight of their possession, the exalted will be able to channel the entirety of their ancient rage towards their foes, who will almost certainly fall in a tremendously bloody spray of bone and blood. Whilst the following group are not truly to be considered as being possessed by demons, I believe that it is important to mention their presence, as they have indeed been corrupted by the infernal powers of the warp. I would, of course, be referring to the Obliterators, who are Chaos Marines that have fallen victim to the aptly named Obliterator virus, resulting in their bodies swelling in size only to fuse with their armor and weapons systems. This virus, born from the depths of the warp itself, exists as a great enigma to most within even the chaotic warbands, and in truth, there are many distinct theories as to how it came to fruition. Some would claim that it was produced by the Dark Mechanicum, in an effort to produce a living effigy of the Omnissiah, who is said to walk as the physical manifestation of the machine god. Others, however, believe that it is a demonic virus which rampantly spreads through its victims, forcing their flesh to meld with their armor and ravaging their minds until all that is left is a compulsion to kill. But in any case, we do know that the first Obliterator arose during the Horus Heresy, when an Iron Warrior commander named as Volk was possessed by a demon known as Sara Arm, who twisted and reformed his body into a mutated mass of iron and gnarled flesh. But in the 41st millennium, Obliterators are a rather rare sight, and they only tend to appear within some of the largest or most chaotic of war zones. But upon these battlegrounds, their foes will bear witness to a true blasphemy against both man and machine. It is impossible to say as to where their old body ends and where the machinery begins, as they have both fused into a sickening shell of bloated meat, barely encased by the jagged plates of their ancient armor. Some have speculated that this melding is not merely physical, but that the soul of the traitorous Marine has somehow conjoined with the surrounding cybernetics, meaning that their weaponry and armor are just as much a part of them as of their own mind. But speaking of their bodies, we cannot consider the internals of an Obliterator as being at all similar to those of our own. Their twin hearts no longer pump blood, but a roiling plasma carrying an electrical charge through their partially metallic vasculature to power the arcane cybernetics, growing through them like a tumor. The brain of an obliterator will have similarly been mutated, sprouting out into a cognitive targeting engine, which only exists to guide the abominable horror towards committing acts of war. Perhaps the most fascinating feature of this warp-tainted aberration, however, would be of its weaponry. The dense biological and cybernetic musculature upon their arms will split apart and blossom forth into a harrowing display of gore-soaked gun barrels, oozing with a thick stream of oily blood. Firing their inborn weapons would feel as natural as breathing, and as soon as they find their target and raise their deathly fist, then they may unleash an apocalyptic salvo of fire, drowning out their victim in a haze of blood and smoke. Though the obliterators are entirely focused upon ranged weapons, there exists a sect of their kind who are compelled to fight in the glory of close quarters combat, and these would be known as the mutilators. Much like their obliterator kin, their arms will sprout with ancient blades and sharp talons. But rather interestingly, many of these instruments would have been the personal weapons of the Marine before he fell to the virus, but have since been fused to his mind, body, and soul. The next category will similarly be of a slightly unconventional form of possession. And in fact, some of you may disagree with my claim here, but I do believe that the demon engines of the Chaos Warbands can still be considered as being possessed. These are specialized mechanical units built by the Warpsmiths and heretics of the Dark Mechanicus, which are not to be piloted by a skilled crew, but instead by an entrapped demon, tethered to the very heart of their new infernal jail. The reason that I mentioned that this is perhaps not a true possession is primarily because the demon is not possessing a living being, as instead it is simply to be chained within a tomb of warp-forged metal. We are not entirely sure at this point if the constructs known as Forge Fiends or Mauler Fiends contain their own machine spirit, but if they do, then we could speculate that the demon and the spirit may be forced to fight for control over their metallic frame. But in any case, once the Warpsmiths are satisfied with their new mechanical beast, they will need to bring it to life by capturing a blasted demon. The actual methods behind this are truly fascinating, as rather than binding the demon to a small artifact and bringing it to their machine, they will instead abduct and drag the Neverborn Horror through to their workshops, almost as if they were a stray and rabid dog. The legends say that the Warpsmiths will weave nooses out of the hair of murderous tyrants, which will be tied around the neck of an unsuspecting demon. Their immaterial hands will then be bound by skeletal chains, carved out of the scrimshawed bones of beasts found only within the eye of terror. Once captured, the demon will naturally kick and scream out ancient curses, but it matters not to the tainted Marine, who will simply bludgeon them into submission before throwing them into the open carcass of their new engine. This will then be sealed with a series of dark runes. But as soon as the demon is able to take control, then the machine will roar to life, and it will attempt to tear apart this brazen mortal. At this point, the workshop will turn into a battleground, as the Marines and heretics defend themselves, but once an opportunity presents itself, they will attack and beat their newborn demon engine into submission. Naturally, there will be many losses, but so long as they are able to quell the rabid nature of their new demonic machine, then it will eventually lower its mechanical head as a newly servile engine who will ever serve its Astartes master. In time, the demon may actually realize that this warp-forged shell is not as bad as it originally seemed, They now hold a physical frame, which means that they can tread the grounds of the material realms, and thanks to their new armaments, they will be able to easily tear through the mortal species of the galaxy. For example, with the Mauler Fiends, they are truly to be seen as something of a crazed mechanical dog charging across a battlefield to rip apart great battle tanks or dreadnoughts in but a brief moment of violence. Supposedly, this mechanical monstrosity is able to gorge itself upon the fallen constructs of a battlefield, and the loose scraps of metal and flesh alike will be boiled away within its churning core, only to produce new forms of ammo to be used in its ranged weaponry. In the wake of a terrible conflict, the Mauler Fiends will return to their Warpsmith Master, caked in thick layers of blood and gore, now stained upon its frame from its ravenous feeding. I should note here that there do exist vehicles within the warbands of the Chaos Marines, which have been possessed in a far more conventional sense. This may be from a Rhino or a Predator tank, for example, where a demonic entity has invaded and taken over the crew, only to corrupt them into a truly nightmarish amalgamation of flesh and metal. Their bodies will have melted together, only to fuse with both the essence of the demon and with the walls of their tank, and this formless horror will now be forever tied with the very nature of their vehicle. The minds of the mortals will be preserved, and even if thousands of years have passed, they will still live within the fleshy interior of their metal tomb, ever conscious of the horrors which they are now forced to commit. Moving away from the possessions of the machine, let us now return to the mortals who have sought out the darker powers, and yet have fallen to a fate most dark. As our final topic, let us learn of the tainted creatures named as the Chaos Spawn. These were once mortals who were possessed by a demonic entity and yet discovered that they were not quite strong enough to withstand its maddening influences, and in their moment of weakness, the demon was able to break free to produce a nightmare beyond compare. We must remember that the mutations of chaos are inherently unstable, and there are only so many gifts which one may bear before they finally break under the weight of the warp. But once this happens, we truly cannot anticipate as to how their bodies will change. New limbs will sprout out from every exposed scrap of flesh. Faces will chew their way out of bone, until there is no longer any trace of the chaotic servant left, leaving only a writhing mass of immaterial flesh. Once fully formed, they will still remain in a state of flux, constantly mutating and shifting, as the errant demonic energies lash out without thought nor focus. Truly, they are nothing short of disgusting to look upon. In captivity, a spawn will squirm about upon the floors, latching onto the walls to climb up, only to collapse into a bubbling soup of ichor, soon to be reborn as a newly formed monstrosity, completely unique from that which came before. Fanged, drooling maws will endlessly gnaw out at random, whilst clutches of eyes vacantly stare into the ether, only to pop and dribble down their mutated torsos in a slick of dark blood. There is nary a trace of intelligence to be found within these beasts, as the mind of the victim will have similarly been shattered and consumed by the powers of the warp, leaving only the most primal and basic instincts of the demons to take control. They serve no real purpose whilst within this state, and so the chaotic warlords will capture the spawns en masse, only to release them upon a battlefield, where they will invariably seek to kill and eviscerate whatever forms of life they encounter. Most Chaos Marines are disgusted by the spawn, yet it is a fate which is ever held within their minds as the darkest outcome from consorting with the demonic powers of the warp. To take up even a single gift of the dark gods is to put yourself at risk of falling as a spawn. But in their arrogance, most would simply presume that they are strong enough to resist the errant energies, and they would never admit to their fears of failing in this dark pursuit of power. The reasons behind pledging one's soul to the ruinous forces of the warp can be incredibly varied, but it will almost universally be accompanied by an innate and burning desire for power. This can be understandable for a baseline human, who in a galaxy as vast as ours may feel somewhat insignificant, and the dark temptations of the warp will so readily offer them with an opportunity to ascend above their own nature as a champion to the dark gods. Even the Space Marines who turned their backs upon the Imperium, though still inherently magnificent beings, still crave for strength. But wherever we find desire, we will soon be met by suffering. Turning to the Empyrean currents of the warp may seem to be the easy road to power, but we must remember that this is the realm of the demon, and they will happily deceive you with the promises of glory if it provides them with the opportunity to possess and steal your soul. Many have tried to wrangle control over the Neverborn, and many have failed. History will not remember their names, as in time, all will find themselves in a moment of weakness, and it will be then that the demonkin strike, breaking your very essence asunder until all that is left is of a writhing mass of flesh. The final goal of a chaotic scion would be to arise as a demon prince, where they will shed the remaining vestiges of their humanity, only to be reborn as an immortal demon of the warp. But very few will ever be successful in this endeavor. And in truth, most will simply fall in their mission, and their souls will be stolen away to be devoured within the maws of a gnashing demon. With this, my dearest friends, we have come to our end. Thank you all for listening to this investigation into the demonic possessions of the Chaos Marines in its entirety. But for now, as I close this chapter once again, I will take my leave and bid you all with a warm goodbye.